I'm Cass Harrington, and you're listening to The Trend. Here's our local and regional news. Hirsch Martin Development LLC presented its pitch this week to sway IU's medical school campus to Evansville's east side. The development site, called Promenade, would be a multi-use site, including apartments, retail, business, and a hotel. IU is to request proposals for an extended local medical school this month, with the Board of Trustees to select a site in January. Other possible locations include downtown Evansville, Warwick County, and USI. Evansville City Council has pulled funding from Roberts Park Stadium from the 2014 budget. The $1.5 million in initial funding would have supported a new park at the site, but council members cited the need for a more comprehensive plan to address the future of all city parks as their reason behind the 7-2 vote. The University of Evansville is hosting an interfaith event centered around a universal food item, well, that is unless you're gluten-free, bread. The Interfaith Bread Festival will include tables set up by volunteers who will introduce breads from several religious and cultural communities thriving in the Evansville area. The Downtown Convention Hotel project ventures forward. Vanderburgh County Council unanimously approved granting innkeepers tax money toward the new downtown hotel project. The county will grant $200,000 annually to support the project for the next 10 years. That's your local and regional news. Stay with us for today's conversation. Support for The Trend comes from members of the Local Programming Fund. I'm Cass Harrington, and today we're talking about music education of all forms. Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation faced budget cuts about a decade ago that slashed music education programs. But in 2011 and 2012, schools reintroduced instrumental music curriculum, but local high schools' marching bands like Central and Wright's still aren't quite as massive as they used to be a decade ago. Today we'll hear how music, like all standard areas of study, nurtures intellectual, social, and emotional growth during all stages of a human being's life. And for more what's going on in local schools, I'm joined now by Monty Skelton, who is actually a product of local Evans School music education and also a teacher at Joshua Academy Elementary Charter School. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
It's good to have you, Monty. And I have to tell the listeners, I first met you when you were performing at Tin Man last week. And since then, I have seen your name on almost every marquee, like at every restaurant, now performing Monty Skelton. It's like you're in so many places at once.
It does seem like sometimes I'm more than one person at the same time. But it's very good to be busy in the Evansville area, and I've had lots of wonderful support.
Well, take me back to your first interaction with, I don't know, music in general. Like what inspired that interest in pursuing it as a lifelong career?
Yes, to go back a long ways, when I was a baby and when I was growing up in my parents' home, I was always exposed to different types of music. I was raised on Motown and the music of Ray Charles and things like that. And when I was in elementary school, I heard Tales and Scales for the first time. And that was also another wonderful inspiration
and
for
Tales
me.
Tales and Scales is a program from the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra, is that
yes,
right?
It actually started off a long time ago by Bridget Muldoon McDaniel and some others. They got together and they wanted to figure out a way to educate young ones in music and show that how fun it can be through movement and theater and dance and incorporating all those things together. And so when I saw them, they put together this show. They brought in lots of instruments. The one that I was telling you about earlier, the one that really stood out to me is the show where there was a saxophone player and there was a xylophone player, a marimba player, and there was drum sets, and there's all kinds of things. And I remember seeing the saxophone and saying, "That's what I want to play."
How old were you at the time?
I was in maybe first or second grade.
Wow.
It was a long, long time ago, and I know that I knew that I had an interest in that instrument, and I had an interest in all types of music. And when I got into fifth grade and was introduced to the music program, I was able to choose that instrument. Huh.
So that one early interaction brought you here. I mean, you're holding a saxophone right now.
That's right.
That's incredible. Well, that reminds me of a clip I have. I went to one of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra's Lollipop concerts, which interestingly enough, has the same kind of intention in mind to inspire young audience members to cultivate an audience for the future, but also that early interest that might be a lifelong thing. So let's listen to that. Around 300 squirmy preschoolers are seated on the floor, just a few feet away from some distinguished instrumentalists. The orchestra members are performing short snippets of some famous concertos, short enough to hold the wavering attention spans of their respective audience members. And in between each song, the musicians ask trivia questions about their instruments. But Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra's conductor Alfred Savia says this performance is anything but trivial.
Kids who are in kindergarten, or indeed probably the majority of those kids are pre-K, maybe 4 or 5 years old, three, maybe even 3 and a half or so. It's maybe a first exposure to live music for those kids. After all, you know, kids have been hearing music since they've been born on TV and all the shows.
This is one of the orchestra's fall lollipop concerts, which have been running for more than a decade.
So the idea is to at least start to ignite some sort of interest in those kids.
A hallmark moment in these concerts is when musicians step off the stage to interact with the kids.
Our musicians get out and kneel down and stoop down and show the kids the instruments, and it's just wonderful. They you know, get to touch the instruments in some cases.
Who else would like to try? Yeah. Excellent.
Great job, Abby.
Great job, Abby. All right, so enjoy the rest of the show.
Here's violinist Jessica Tom.
Well, this is a violin. How many strings does it have? 4, yeah. What is this?
Growing up, what made me attracted to the violin was that I actually got a chance to go to kids' concerts, and the first thing that I think about is that it should be fun as well as educational.
Tong says music education is one intended outcome, but here's another one, generating an audience that will come back to listen in the future.
Making 150, 200 kids laugh and be engaged is quite a feat, but the key is just to have them be engaged so they want to come back a second time.
Maestro Alfred Savia says educational outreach is often required by orchestras in music schools, a trend that has been gaining momentum for the past decade.
Some of this outreach and educational activities are becoming part of the training of musicians. I mean, when I was in music school, you might have done music education if you were going to become a music teacher in the schools, but if you were a performer, you only studied Beethoven and Brahms and learned how to play your instrument, period.
He says this is due in part because awareness and exposure to classical music has decreased compared to previous generations.
As time goes on and people wind up getting a little too old or literally dying, then they're the next generation, their kids become the subscribers and so on. I think probably about 15 or 20 years ago, that started not being an automatic.
So now, in addition to executing a brilliant audition, musicians like those in the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra have to divvy a portion of their time to teaching and inspiring young listeners in the hopes that one day those kids might remember that one lollipop concert from way back when and return to hear that same concerto. Only this time, they'll hear the longer version. Cass Harrington, WNIN. This is Cass Harrington, and you're listening to The Trend. We're talking about music education today, and I'm joined by Monty Skelton. Could you relate to that at all when you heard it?
Most definitely. Actually, I was sitting here, and you probably saw me. I was smiling from ear to ear just because I heard how some of the musicians were saying, you know, how many strings does the violin have? And I remember going through that and feeling the instruments when I was younger, and just experiencing all that new experience of seeing something in front of you that actually makes that sound. That's really neat.
Yeah, well, neat. It was neat to watch your reaction. But we're going to go to a break here for just a minute, and then we'll talk more with Monty Skelton.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to The Trend here on 88.3 WNIN FM and online at WNIN.org. Support today comes from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039.
All right, you are listening to The Trend, and you just heard the talented Monty Skelton on saxophone. Thank you for playing. That's wonderful. We have you here in the studio not just because of your music expertise, but you also are a very engaged teacher here in the community. You started the music education program at Joshua Academy. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, most definitely. And I just want to first start off by saying I love Joshua Academy. It's an excellent, excellent school. I really love it a lot. And I was very blessed to have the opportunity to become the music educator there last year. Last August, I was hired. And we started off, and I remember my first classroom and getting it. And there was pretty much nothing in there but desks and chairs and thinking, how am I going to start a music program and a band program with fifth and sixth grade and all of that from next to nothing? And thankfully, with all of the help and support of the community, we were able to pull it together. Now we have enough instruments for both fifth and sixth grade. I think I have close to 50 people enrolled in the
band. Yeah, you're teaching program. Kindergarten through fifth grade, is that right?
That's right. Wow. Kindergarten through fifth grade, and we're able to we teach all the grades, and they all get to have fun and learn some new music.
Wow. And tell me about the students in particular. I know Joshua Academy is an interesting case.
Yes, the students that Joshua Academy have, they are all wonderful students, and we try to give them the best opportunity that we can to learn, and we try our best to come up with the best ways to teach our students, because not every child, not every person learns the same way, and so we try to expose them to different ways of learning and different things to learn so that they can get the best education possible. A lot of times some of our students don't have the same opportunities as others, whether that be because of lower income or family situations or whatever it may be. Some don't have the opportunity to for instance have their first instrument or have something like that. And so our job is to go in and give them that opportunity so that they can stay on a great path towards college and towards a great life.
Huh. So in addition to music, I mean, it sounds like they get to take ownership and pride of something.
Most definitely. I really like this year we actually have a robotics program at Joshua Academy, which I wish that I had that when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
It's pretty awesome. And actually tomorrow they're going on a competition for Lego robotics, and they're going to compete in... I saw the little robots. It's really amazing. They also have great opportunities for learning how to read, learning how to write, and it's just amazing to see how much the students grow throughout the course of the year.
Well, one of the themes we are discussing and kind of delving into today is how at different phases in a person's life, music offers something very different and unique. I mean, you know, whether you are, I mean, you're being exposed to classical music for the first time, that early intrigue, maybe something developmental or intellectual is going on there. Or maybe if you're going through a painful situation in your life, music could come as therapy. But for these kids, what sorts of things have you seen? What is music offering them that they need?
There's a lot of things, actually, and I once again, I feel blessed that I'm able to see this in our especially our younger bright ones. We call them bright ones here. They're at Joshua Academy because they're all so bright and ready to learn. And it's all interesting to see. And I like to, in my classes, I like to say, you know, how does this music make you feel? Or we'll listen to a little bit of classical or expose them to jazz or see them dance when they hear African music. For the past 2 weeks, we've been talking about African music. So they get so I brought in a djembe, I brought in a talking drum so they could see that. We're able to use technology. So I use YouTube to show them how it's really supposed to be played, because I can't play everything perfectly. And just to see them want to get up and dance, or they get excited, or they hear classical music and it reminds them of something, or it kind of makes them think of sleeping, things like that. It's really awesome to see that exposure and that and what it does to them.
Well, Monty, my last question. You've lived in Evansville your whole life as a student, as a performer, and now as a teacher. Would you say that Evansville is a good place for a musician to live?
I think it is. There are so many opportunities for us to perform. There's so many opportunities for us to learn. The Philharmonic Orchestra gives us a wonderful opportunity to hear professional classical music. We have jazz bands that we can go in and see. There are venues like Lamasco's for the older crowd and Deerhead for the younger crowd. You know,
which you'll be playing tonight.
That's right. Yes, my band's playing
among
there.
Several places.
Yes, I'm playing a bajillion places today and tomorrow night. And there's just so many different places that you can be exposed to music, to play music. And for there are open mics where younger ones can go and perform music. It's a great place to be.
And you said that's something. I mean, even in the past 5 years or so, you've seen it grow.
Most definitely. And I think any musician that that has been in Evansville for a number of years has seen the music scene grow. And it's such an amazing thing to see. I can just think back, even 7-8 years ago, there were some places to go and hear good music. But now I have to pick and choose if I'm going to go, you know, where I'm going to go each week, because there's so many different musicians and so many places to go.
All right. Well, Monty, thank you so much for coming on the program today. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you.
That is Monty Skelton, who is a local musician, and he teaches at Joshua Academy Elementary Charter School. He'll perform with his band Skelton's Montourage at Deerhead Sidewalk Cafe tonight. You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington, and up next, we'll hear a conversation I had with the founder of the New Harmony Music Festival and School, Christopher Lair.
You're listening to The Trend here on 88.3 WNIN FM and online at WNIN.org. Support today comes from Rabin Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Rabin offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at RabinTire.com.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington. Up next, we're going to hear a conversation I had with Christopher Lair, who is the founder of the New Harmony Music Festival and School. I'm here with Christopher Lair, the founder of the New Harmony Music Festival and School, and he is also, would you say, a multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist. Today we're talking about educational outreach and a program in particular that he's arranged for students to experience local identity and heritage through music.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So you're originally from Lafayette, Indiana?
Yes, I grew up in Tippecanoe County in northwestern Indiana, yes.
And now you're living in Brooklyn, and in between, sometimes you are in Moab, Utah.
Yes.
But I want to take it back to the early days of Christopher Lair and your exposure to music from the beginning, because, mm-hmm. of course, with the direction of this conversation, we're going to talk about early exposure for children and young adults and why that's important. But starting with you, you know, what was music education like for you growing up?
Both of my parents are or were professional musicians. My father, fiddle player, bluegrass fiddle player, and my mother, a singer. Neither of them worked in music education early in their lives, but my father, who's now 89, has been teaching fiddle lessons in Tippecanoe County for 35 years, since he was in his 50s. So he retired and went into music education and became a teacher of private lessons from virtually all the time that I've been working as a professional musician. I think when you work in the professional world, one of the great satisfactions one can have is to give back to your constituency and also to be a pedagogue to young musicians that are coming up. But I also had an interest in history. And so a lot of my early experiences in music education was, for instance, learning that there was music of the voyageurs in the Wabash Valley in the 18th century. So to me, music and history kind of began to combine together a little bit. And then as I went on...
So music had place for you.
Very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, there Fort Weotenon, there was a French fort. And my father actually learned a bunch of the old French fiddle tunes and things like that. So in a kind of a non-formal way, I was learning about the history of local music from a very early age.
So to answer the question, first exposure was in the household with your parents.
Yes. We had a music night every Tuesday night where my mom would make a big dinner and neighbors and friends would come over. Music was shared and played in a very casual and a very loving environment.
Uh-huh. Well, what about in the school system? Was there a structure or a program where there was that interaction with musicians?
Without question. In the 1970s, I had an opportunity to study the cello as a part of the public school string program in Lafayette, Indiana, under a fellow named Ray Bernhardt, who was in music education. I can't believe I remember his name.
That's
after
great.
All these years.
I don't think I can remember my teacher.
And that was in fourth grade.
Wow.
That was in the fourth grade. And I studied the cello for 3 years, dragging that cello to school 3 days a week. And they arranged for an instrument to be placed in my hands during that time for $7 a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I studied up and through the seventh grade when I took up the bassoon in public school. Studied the bassoon all through the end of high school. Was accepted to the conservatory at Ball State University, later received a scholarship, and we gave, as a part of the Muncie Symphony Woodwind Quintet, which was our scholarship organization, we gave perhaps 30 concerts a year during my undergraduate years in public schools.
Wow, that's incredible.
As a part of that, of that scholarship to Ball State University.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting. Things now are a little different. I think the recession has been a big part of that. Some public schools have had to cut music from their budget. EVSC, they're slowly bringing it back. Last year, they were able to put their instrumental program back in place. But I'm wondering, is it more on the shoulders of musicians to educate? Is it a responsibility, you think?
I think that if we can ask that same question about some of the other classical disciplines, literature, mathematics, science, I think that's the answer to that question. There is no question in my mind that when we think of things like music therapy, when we think of group music activities, that music in education is as essential as any of these other classical disciplines. The state of Indiana, in its sort of center-right existence in the 70s, was really very much socially progressive in that they offered wonderful public school education programs. If you're asking me, does that or should it fall on the shoulders of private organizations or private individuals at this time? I think the answer to that is, if the boat's sinking, you better bail. But if you ask me what should be done, again, I say, as individuals, as stewards of our children, and as the stewards of our culture in this community, whether it be Evansville or a small town like New Harmony, we have a responsibility to ensure that our public educators are reaching out to our children in areas of music and art. The universe without music is insanity.
Hmm. Well, and of course, there's numerous studies on music and the development of language or that desire to achieve. I mean, it's more than even just music or history in the case of what you teach. So it's multidisciplinary.
Yes, it is. Well, I certainly believe in sharing music in a multidisciplinary fashion because it is something that surrounds us. It's so ubiquitous. It permeates our lives, whether it be via advertising or background music at the shopping mall, or if you're attending a concert at the Kennedy Center. Each of those experiences, you are experiencing music. If you are attentive to that process, one never knows. But there are reasons why music is around us. It keeps us human. It is a human experience. There's a bucolic quality, perhaps, that where music can be a kind of a mirror of nature. But the nature of man is to make music.
It's in our nature. Mm. That's very interesting.
You're listening to The Trend on 88.3 WNIN. I'm your host, Cass Harrington, and we're in the middle of a conversation I had with Christopher Layer. He's the founder of the New Harmony Music Festival and School. Just be sure and stay with me for the last segment. You don't want to miss it. We'll talk with Amy Miller, a mother who created a foundation to celebrate her son's love for music. We'll hear her story and more ahead. About this weekend, is you have a performance, Field, Forest, and Stream. That's on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But on Friday, you are working with 8th grade honors history students.
Yes.
From Posey County. What's going on?
Well, we're obviously very excited. This is our second year of the Fall Education Outreach Weekend in combination with Historic New Harmony, which is based in New Harmony, Indiana, and associated with the University of Southern Indiana. On Friday morning, we'll host 40 middle school students. I have a wonderful Indiana folk singer will be performing music of the kind of local historic trades. Since these are Indiana State History students, we'll be doing music of the mining trade. Of course, there's a great coal mining and oil history in this area. The river trades, of course, as we're on the Wabash River. The agrarian trades, as obviously we are surrounded by all this beautiful fall color and fall farmland. And also music of a little bit of music of nature as well.
So, well, briefly, I mean, what is the significance of a mining song or an agrarian song? The history, was it? I mean, did people out in the field sing?
There's without question music in the home and social dance music and things like that were very much a part of the early 19th century Indiana history. So, for instance, Robert Henry Fauntleroy, who was a resident in the early 19th century, is a classic example of what I'm talking about. He was a fifer and a flute player. He married one of the daughters of Robert Owen and settled in New Harmony in the 1820s. He wrote down all of these dance tunes, which are a part of the Fauntleroy manuscript at the Working Men's Institute Library in New Harmony. The reason I mention him is he was one of the early creators of the U.S. Geodetic Survey. So, as you know, our early geological maps were drawn by William McClure and his colleagues in New Harmony. So, to me, Fauntleroy represents exactly what we're talking about. Why mining songs? Well, there were people going out from New Harmony, literally across the what would become the country. Fauntleroy was down in the Gulf Coast doing his survey when he died in 1849. He traveled out from New Harmony, studying geology, looking for potential mining properties, coming back, giving that information to McClure, and then at night he'd kick his shoes off and get out his flute and play, or play for a dance in New Harmony.
Wow.
Perfect example of how music and industry can be a part of a single individual's life.
Huh. And so why, why bring this to middle school children? What's the intention maybe behind?
I love that age group. The eighth grade students are kind of right there at the beginning of puberty. They're dealing with their own sense of identity, their own sense of self, potentially separating their sense of self from their family sense of self. Mm-hmm. And to me, music and history and culture give one a sense of local place and local identity. And as we share some of this history, for instance, not every kid's maybe going to go off to, say, mining school or to, et cetera, et cetera. But imagine a young person who experiences the New Harmony Music Festival History Day, mm-hmm. and goes off to, say, Butte, Montana to mining school and says, well, not only am I do I deserve to be here as a student from the poorest county in the state of Indiana, but I am from the place where the first geological map was drawn in this country. And that's the kind of thing we want to share with them. If we utilize the musical vehicle to communicate that, we are sending it in through a very unique channel into their mind, into their memory. It is a little bit different than looking at it on a computer screen, reading it in a book, or having someone, you know, just verbally speak to you this information. We're sending it in on a channel that an adolescent person really gets, and that's music.
Yeah, I can even relate to that in a way. When I went to University of Kentucky, every Thursday they'd have a bluegrass band play in the library. And that was the first time I'd really experienced bluegrass. I mean, I'm from Kentucky, and I didn't, you know, I grew up on pop music. But when I moved to Chicago, bluegrass kind of was all the rage. It was really strange. But for me, it had that emotional tie. You know, I met people from Appalachia.
Biblio bluegrass or something like that.
It was meaning, and I could relate to it, and even in a very shallow sense, but it you know, I had an exposure to it.
And Kentucky, of course, is the very much the home, like Arkansas, Tennessee, the Carolinas, of some of the great folk songs of the repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And to associate that with, that age group where they are evolving and searching for that identity, I would imagine, too, that it generates maybe diversity and interest.
If we choose to share our culture, our history, our heritage of place, of Posey County or Vandenberg County or Southern Indiana in general, if we choose to share that with our youngers because we believe it is important, shouldn't we also be sharing each facet of that? History is... we could simply leave it to the quote-unquote historians and, you know, here, children, here is a series of words and deeds. Memorize them. It's important. I don't see that message. I see here is your lively art. Here is the heritage of your lively art. Here is why your grandmother sang Sweet Betsy from Pike. Because it was a jumping-off place for the westward migration in the mid-19th century. Is that not a more exciting and in some ways a more important vehicle and subject matter for our young people who are going out into the world with a sense, with whatever sense of local identity and whatever sense of local experience that we have? And when we think of our world today, is not one's own sense of identity the only lifeboat we have in a culture that bombards us with apps and with films of fantasy and people flying through the air? I'm a big comic book fan, but the point is there is the same kind of superhero quality to traditional music when you can instantly pull a room of people together who are from different cultures, different races, different religions, speaking as one voice in a musical voice that relates to local history. That's the excitement of singing a sea shanty or singing a work song is, you know, in the day, it was to get everybody to quite literally pull together. Should we not do that today in music education, in history education, in celebrating our culture, our local culture, and the culture of the United States?
You are quite passionate about this.
It's very much the thing that I rise in the morning to, and I go to. There's never a time when music is not a part of my daily activities, and sometimes that gets in the way. If I'm whistling in an elevator and suddenly I realize everyone has turned around and they're staring at me and wondering why it's because I think for me, music in my life, maybe because of my parents and family, that cup has always been brimming full. And I am really happy through the venue of New Harmony Music Festival and School to share that not only with professional or semi-professional musicians, but with these young students this coming Friday morning.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me, Chris.
Oh, my pleasure, Cass. I'm happy to.
You're listening to The Trend. I'm Cass Harrington, and today we've heard from a few local musicians and saying that people of all ages are inherently musical beings. And depending on where a person is in life, developmentally speaking, or even in experiencing a situation, music can be nearly a prescription for that specific moment. For this final segment, we're going to shift gears and talk about music education and the role it played for a mother and her preschool son. But first, some introductions are in order. We are joined here in the studio by three women, and I'm so thankful they are here. First, we have Chris Miller, who is a cellist, and she's been playing since she was 10. Hello, Kristen.
Hello.
She says hello. And I have Casey DePriest. She is the Music Together Center Director, and we'll talk to her a little bit more about music together in a second. And finally, I'm here with Amy Miller, who is the mother of Isaac, and she is hosting a second the second time around of an event called Isaac's Day of Music, and that's on this Sunday. So we will hear more from Amy in just a second. But first, Casey, I would like to hear a little bit about Music Together because it ties in with Amy's story. You both kind of intersect it at one point. So for the listeners who don't know, briefly, what is Music Together?
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Music Together is a parent-child music and movement program that was first established in 1987, and it is for infants and children up to age 5 and their parents or caregivers. We do weekly classes. They come for about a 10-week semester, 45 minutes a week, and just engage musically with one another. And it's a research-based program that really has proven the philosophy that Music Together was originally established.
And that philosophy being that children are musical,
Yes, that's right. First and foremost, that all children are musical, regardless of their cognitive abilities or regardless of their backgrounds, all children are musical. And that can be very easily inspired and encouraged and developed by musical interaction, even from an infant on. And so that's kind of the first piece. And then also that all children have the ability to develop music competence, which basically means that they can sing in tune and they can play a steady beat or move their body to a steady beat. And a lot of times parents don't realize that. They think, oh, you know, either my child has this musical talent or they don't. Yes, they have to be musically gifted. Uh-huh. And what the research shows is that that is actually not true. It's the children who have that musical influence and the musical support and that are just allowed to play musically as children, they are able to develop those skills. And it's really exciting for parents to see when they understand that.
And there's something interesting about having a multi-level class. What's going on there?
So yes, one of the unique qualities or unique characteristics of the Music Together program is that we do offer mixed age classes. So we have infants through 5-year-olds all in the same class. And it's significant in that children are then allowed to participate and to create music on their own developmental level. There are no expectations in place. You know, we don't have a 3-year-old class and everybody has to do what 3-year-olds do. Children can really participate, you know, in the way that they need to, in the way that the developmentally is right for them. And that's one of the things I really love about our program, that it's also very much a family-based program. So siblings can come together and families can engage as a family. We have moms and dads that come to class. We have grandmas that come to class. And it just becomes a very wonderfully rich musical environment with lots of different ages and backgrounds and cultures all being
I have a clip, actually, of a Music Together song. We can listen to that, and then we'll hear how you and Amy hooked up.
All right.
It's called Obiswana. Uh,
Okay. I have to know what's going on there.
Okay, so Obwa Sana is a great example of multicultural music. There are all kinds of music that are a part of the Music Together program. So that's not, Obwa Sana is not something that we are used to hearing in our English language. But for children, as they hear that, it almost comes across as a nonsense syllable and what we call songs without words. So in Music Together, to encourage children to sing along and encourage them to make those sounds, we use what's called songs without words. And so they can sing Obwa Sana, which is just a really simple
like collection Hakuna Matata.
Kind of like that. Or yeah. Even just, you know, on ba 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 or da da da, so that we get the language out of it, which kind of makes the music a little bit more accessible to a younger child. And then as they develop, we start including language that maybe is appropriate about, you know, to help them understand what they're doing. They're taking a bath. We include, you know, we would sing that tune, but sing about taking a bath or singing about brushing their teeth or singing about going to school. So the music is really accessible in that way. And we really encourage the parents to play with it and to not just stay stuck on the CDs that they receive, but to also make the music their own, which is something that Amy was really, really good at with Isaac.
And I think, yeah, let's hear about that. Amy Miller, you participated in these classes with Isaac. And before we talk about those classes, let's tell the listeners about Isaac, what made him so unique and so special. And then we'll talk more about, you know, the interactions you had in these classes.
Gosh, I think every parent thinks their child is unique and special. Sure. But to me, I'm a musician. When, you know, my husband and I found out that we were expecting, I knew that I wanted music to be a big part of our child's life. And so from birth, I introduced music, whether I was singing or we were listening to music and stretching and, you know, whatever I could do to expose him to music right from the start. And he really picked up on it quickly. He loved to sing and to dance. Because of my music therapy background, I have a lot of instruments at home, and he loved to play instruments. Especially Christmas songs, for some reason. We would sing Christmas songs all year long because that's what he wanted to sing. And, you know, it was a huge part of his life, and it was a very special connection that he and I had.
Yeah. Up until he was diagnosed, what was the diagnosis?
He was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
That's right.
Just after his third birthday.
Yeah. And when he got the diagnosis, you shortly after enrolled in Music Together classes.
We were actually in our very first semester of Music Together classes, and he was diagnosed, I think, one or two weeks before the end of the semester.
Wow. And so what did that, I mean, I imagine, you know, being there with him, you know, you probably got a lot out of this as well with the music. But I guess starting with Isaac, what was he like in class?
He was so much fun to have in class. I, you know, was staying at home with him, and you know, he's our only child, and so he didn't have a lot of opportunity to interact with other children. We would do play groups and things like that, but this was every week we went to see his music friends and Miss Casey, and we would dance and sing and play, and just to see him have that opportunity to interact with the other children was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Casey, you're nodding your head. Do you remember something?
Oh, I remember. I just remember that he was always so intentional about his music playing. And I remember that you could just see the joy just kind of when he would get an instrument in his hand, or when the favorite song would come on, or when we would do Tiny Tim, or, you know, when we would, you know, sing his favorite songs, he would just be like all in it from the tips of his toes to the top of his head. He was just all in it. And it was really fun to see Amy encouraging him so much. You know, as a musician, I know that she knew the importance of that. But that's one of the things that is really neat about our program, is that I feel like it really empowers parents to you know, spend that time, spend nurturing time musically with their children, whether that be at bedtime or just playing in the kitchen or, you know, just are coming to class, you know, it's just really neat to see that bond that that is created through music when they play musically together.
Well, speaking of bedtime, Amy, you had mentioned to me before that the lullaby that's part of the Music Together curriculum was particularly significant.
Yes, we ended every Music Together class with a lullaby to help the kids calm down, and because we can get a little rambunctious and rowdy sometimes during those classes. But Isaac, he fell in love with those lullabies, and they became just a part of our nighttime routine: bath, pajamas, prayers, and a lullaby. And he had, you know, there were a couple that he was especially fond of, but, you know, and then it kind of migrated into nap time, that it became part of our nap time routine. And it didn't matter if we were at home. We spent a lot of time at Riley Hospital when he was in treatment, and it didn't matter if he was sleeping in his bed at home or if we were sleeping in the hospital. He had to have a lullaby. It stayed part of our routine no matter where we were.
In the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so this was so important to you. So much so that now you have committed to creating a foundation with the goal, hopefully, of creating a scholarship so more kids can attend Music Together classes. Is that right?
Yeah. Last year, my husband Matt and I established the Isaac Miller Music Matters Endowment Fund in memory of Isaac, and it's actually managed by the Warwick County Community Foundation. Mm-hmm. After Isaac passed away, Casey actually approached us and said he'd really like to think about doing something in memory of Isaac that has to do with Music Together. And we loved the idea. It was the perfect way to remember him. And as we got to talking about it, we realized that a scholarship to help one child attend Music Together classes wasn't enough. We wanted to be able to help as many children as possible be able to experience music education, music therapy, you know, somehow. And in working with the Warwick County Community Foundation, they've helped us set up a fund where we'll be able to grant money to different organizations to help many children all at the same time rather than just one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we are going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back, talk to you a little bit more, and yeah. So you're listening to The Trend. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Trend here on 88.3 WNIN FM. You can also hear this program streaming live on our website, WNIN.org, and you can hear an archived version of this program a little bit later as well at that same website, WNIN.org.
You're listening to The Trend here on WNIN. I'm your host, Cass Harrington, and you just heard Chris Miller, a cellist. She's quite, well, awesome. That was Bach, is that right? Mm-hmm. We'll have the ladies on mic confirm that. But I'm joined by Amy Miller, who's the mother of Isaac and started an endowment fund in his memory, and there will be an event this weekend called Isaac's Day of Music.
Yes, this is the second annual Isaac's Day of Music. And it is a family fun festival, so there's something for all ages. It is this Sunday, November 3rd, from 1 to 5 p.m. at First Christian Church in Newburgh.
Right, and last year, I understand, there were, 500 people? It sold out?
Yeah, we had ordered 500 tickets last year, and we sold them all. We let people come in without a ticket afterwards, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. And this all supports the foundation that you started.
Yes, yeah. All of the funds raised go directly to the Isaac Miller Music Matters Endowment Fund.
Great. Well, I have one quick question before the show ends in a few minutes. you know, this whole theme was about music, especially at different points in our lives. We talked about, you know, early childhood or middle school when you're searching for an identity, and even during emotional times, times in your life where you kind of need a source of comfort and healing. And was this music therapy, did that offer that for you in some ways?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Isaac had music therapy when he was in the hospital, but, you know, I still use music, and the same music that was important to him has continued to be important to me, and I really find comfort. We talked about the lullabies that were such an integral part of our time together. I still, you know, I find them comforting, and, you know, I find so much meaning in music, and, you know, I don't even know how to finish that sentence, that, you know, there's so much power in it. And, you know, sometimes it just takes a few notes of one of Isaac's favorite songs, and I'm transported back and have all these wonderful, happy memories of us together. And so, you know, by creating this endowment in his memory, he'll continue to live on through the endowment and through the funds it's able to grant, and allow other families to make those memories like we have.
And if I can just say, that's one of the things that I saw last year at Isaac's Day of Music, was that families were making music together and enjoying a wonderful event, but also making memories that last on. And so I think Isaac is really being remembered this weekend.
Right. Well, that is this Sunday in Newburgh, and we'll have more information about that online. Amy Miller, thank you so much for joining me, and Casey DePriest from Music Together. This was wonderful. And we have Chris Miller here back in the corner. You can take us out with some more music if you want. So there you have it. We've heard how music inspires, defines, and comforts. And it's getting even louder, or should I say better, here in the community. The Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation's Director of Fine Arts says high school marching bands are slowly gaining speed again, but he adds the quality of performances has gone up in the past 3 years. Wright's High School, for example, was a mere 5.5 points away from making it to the state finals. If you want to know more about a person or event mentioned on today's show, head over to the Trends page on WNIN.org. If you liked a song you heard on the program, you can also find a playlist and information about the artists featured on the program. Tune in next week. We will have a special beer edition of The Trend. We'll tour a brewery, talk to some home brewers, and have a drinking stein full of boozy history. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from Ryan Reynolds at the Courier and Press. My friend and colleague Tony Voss engineered today's live program, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington, and we'll talk next week. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.